Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Before we get into the lowlights of the scoring bonanza on Saturday at the PGA Championship, Scottie Scheffler, the Brooks Koepka, the Rory McIlroy rounds that cost him a shot at this title at Valhalla. Rex, nice tie. Let's talk about this leaderboard. Xander Schauffele and Kyle Morikawa are now tied for the lead through 54 holes. But I think the big story that transpired on Saturday is that it is a much more congested leaderboard. In all, there are eight players separated by just three shots. Included in that mix are some very intriguing names: Bryson DeChambeau, Victor Hovland, Sahith Theegala, just to name a few. What's caught your eye this Saturday evening at Valhalla?
It's just not, you're right, it's congested. There's a lot of players there. You and I probably aren't huge fans of Valhalla, if we're being honest. I'm not giving away any secrets on your front. If you look at how soft, and I don't want to say easy, but comparative to a major championship, it is playing easy. And so it's not exactly the test that we would probably want, but you can't argue with what's the results right now. And when you look at, you have Colin Morikawa, you have Xander Schauffele, you have Shane Lowry right there in the mix, Victor Hovland, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Rose. Like, it's not a leaderboard that you would flinch at all. So apparently the golf course at least identifies the best players who are playing the best golf at the moment. You and I can still have our opinions, and I would argue that they're still valid. That the thing that caught my eye is going into Sunday, we saw some flips today that I think will become the norm tomorrow. There was a time when it looked like Xander was almost stuck in neutral, if not reversed, early on the front nine. He just couldn't make a putt. He ends up giving up the lead. Colin Morikawa takes over. We have a bit of a, you know, things are pretty frantic coming down the stretch. Tomorrow, if that happens, I would argue that it would probably be the best case scenario for the PGA and the PGA Championship, because you have the names that you want. And if you get sort of that frenzy, if you get that back and forth, that's exactly the recipe that you want for success.
Yeah, one of my criticisms of this golf course, I think I expressed it earlier this week, potentially on Wednesday or Thursday, is that there does not seem to be that sort of volatility that you get when conditions are really firm and fast, or when you do have kind of those shaved areas around the green. There's the Zoysia, as hard as Johnson Wagner is making it look on live from, it's actually quite easy for players to get up and down if they're in that very short cut. I dug in to your point, Rex, on the 15th hole for a story that's now up on NBCSports.com/golf. As we mentioned, Xander Schauffele had really struggled to separate himself through the day. It was very frustrating if you're a Xander Schauffele fan, because he missed just two fairways on Saturday. He missed just two greens on Saturday, and yet he had just a single shot lead before he rolled in a 30-footer for birdie on 14. It seemed like, okay, this was his moment. 15's an attackable hole if you could hit the fairway. 18's obviously a reachable par 5. It seemed like it could potentially could have been go zone, with 17 offering a birdie chance as well. Instead, I talked to Xander about this after his round, just kind of overcooked his 9-iron, may have misjudged the wind a little bit, and was absolutely dead behind the green. In contrast, Kyle Morikawa hit one of his best shots of the day, kind of feathered a wedge shot in there to 6 feet. It wasn't just one three-shot swing between Xander Schauffele's double bogey and Kyle Morikawa's birdie. It was 2 3-shot swings, with Sahith Theegala also having an unlikely chip in from behind the green, and he now sits in solo third place at just a single shot back. How much now, 45 minutes, an hour removed, Rex, do you think that hole, that momentum swing, will ultimately decide the winner of this PGA Championship? Do you feel like that was a pivotal moment for Morikawa, and conversely, kind of a critical error for Xander Schauffele?
It could. I was taken earlier today by Rory McIlroy saying there was a 6-hole stretch today, and his comment was, if I don't win this championship, that it'll be because of that 6-hole stretch. So it is interesting. Like, you and I, and tomorrow we'll be sitting here and we'll probably be dissecting another hole, another set of circumstances, because it's always kind of your prisoner of the moment in that situation. For the player, I always am interested, because they can always point to something that you and I or the average golf fan probably missed, and they can point and say, yep, that's where things swung in the wrong direction. I know this is a mini podcast, so I'm going to make this quick. You mentioned poor Johnson Wagner, bless his heart. He's doing God's work this week, and we're putting him in some really tough situations. But I was just doing live from, and I was on the set with Todd Lewis, and we were waiting to come up and do our little spiel. And Chris Como, who of course is the swing coach working with Xander, doing great work with Xander, he walked up behind us right as Johnson was starting to do his whatever his segment was tonight. And Chris, being the consummate professional, he goes, actually, I watched the other night when he was hitting some bad chip shots. He goes, I think I can help him. Like, tell him, like, I think I can help. I really do think I can. I saw some things and tell him to reach out to me. And right as he's saying this, Johnson is hitting his first chip shot, which went probably 20 yards right. It was a dead shank. And Chris's reaction was, yep, nope, nothing I can do.
Never mind. He seems like a lost cause. I have to give Johnson Wagner, who is a great friend, an unbelievable teammate for us on Golf Channel, I have to give him, as you say, a monsoon of credit, because he is openly admitting that he has the chip yips. Oh. And that twice this week, during our premier primetime programming, they have put him in a position in which he has to face his fears and try to hit chip shots on live television. It has not gone well. But the clip, I think it was from Thursday night, when he was boning chip shots and then chunking chip shots short of the fourth green, was some of the, I think, some of the best comedy that's ever appeared on Golf Channel. I was crying. I was laughing so hard.
Well, and I don't know. I don't think you were probably listening to the sound because you were locked into writing your story. But he said, after he has chanked not one but two chip shots again tonight on live TV in prime time, that I can't wait to get to the U.S. Open in Pinehurst. And I thought, that can't be right. Because it can't, it's not going to get any
easier. He can put it everywhere.
But that's not what we're going to ask him to do. We're not going to put him in a position for success. So we digress. I'm sorry.
We do certainly digress. We look at this leaderboard, Rex. I mean, who do you feel most confident in? Because you can make, I mean, you can pick nits at all these players, whether it's Colin Morikawa, who is trying to become the player that he was when he won two major championships by the age of 24. He's kind of sort of been going at it alone. He has reunited sort of with his longtime swing coach, Rick Sessinghouse, but also at the Masters, you know, he was going at it alone, played in the final group with Scottie Scheffler, faded with a final round 74. He said, and this is a player who I've known for a very long time and has never been short on confidence, he said he needed to give himself a pep talk on Saturday night to get himself in the proper headspace to make sure he knows that he can go out and win this. I found that very interesting. Xander Schauffele, we've talked about his struggles with the 54-hole lead. Even just recently last week at Quahala, where he got lapped by Roy McIlroy, overall, he's just 2-for-8 when in that position. Sahith Theegala is still relatively fresh on the PGA Tour scene. Shane Lowry has not won an individual title since the Open in 2019. Victor Hovland is just a week back into his work with Joe Mayo and striking it well again. Bryce DeChambeau trying to capture his second major championship after a setback at the Masters. All that in totality, that was a 30,000-foot view of the players who are mostly in contention here, Rex. Who do you feel most confident Sunday at Valhalla?
Well, you proved the point that I was just about to make. You can go down that list and find something wrong with all of them. And that's not a knock. It's, we're going to sit here and you're going to pick nits, as you just said. But I can sit here and say that, yes, Colin Morikawa looks like his former self. But I would say right now, it seems like a shell of his former self. This isn't the guy who just ball struck his way.
He's second in stroke gained tee to green this week, Rex. How is he a shell of him for his former self?
He just doesn't have that look of the guy that won the PGA Championship at Harding Park. And it probably has everything to do with the idea that of what he touched on, that he does need to give himself a pep talk, that he still, look, you can lose your swing and lose your confidence, and then you're slowly going to get it back. And we're probably seeing that right now. We're in the midst of that with Colin Morikawa and certainly Victor Hovland. And that is a process. But behind that process, there's a lag to this. Getting your confidence back. And I think in this particular case, one follows the other. And I don't think either one of those players are back to 100%. They're close and they're clearly playing well in a major championship. And I'm not going to be surprised if either one of them wins tomorrow. But you go down the list. Xander Schauffele is doing what we talked about last week on Sunday at Wells Fargo, where he started hot and then just didn't seem to have any sparks after that. That's what we saw today out of him. It seems like he was stuck in neutral. Sahith Theegala, he's never really been in this position before, so you're wondering how he's going to respond. Shane Lowry had a magical 62 today and a putt at a historic 61, but man, that was all putting. You and I were talking about it. I think he picked up more than 5.5 strokes gained putting. I'm not quite sure that's sustainable given where what his stats say he is up to this point this year. I can keep going on and on. Like Bryson DeChambeau is the one that excites me. Like that's the story I would want to write tomorrow night because he is just the content fountain that just keeps on giving. But he closed down the range last night in the dark, and he was the second guy off the range tonight. So Bryson is being maximum Bryson and still searching for stuff. It's hard for me to point to one name on that leaderboard and be like, yep, that's my guy.
That's why I think this is makes this Sunday just so intriguing. And I would go, I think I probably feel the most confident in Xander Schauffele, if nothing else, just because of the eye test. Seeing Xander Schauffele play golf, he's hitting it on an absolute rope. He's the most consistent ball striker on that leaderboard. To me, he's the most consistent player on that leaderboard.
Consistent everything, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's consistently good in everything. Yes, have the putts sort of dried up over the past 36 holes? Yeah, without a doubt. I think it was also unrealistic he was going to continue the torrid pace that he showed on Thursday when he became the first player in history to record his second 62 in a major championship. And as much as he's been faulted for his final round performance, and again, 2-for-8, the 54-hole lead in individual events on the PGA Tour, he has not been terrible. You know, it's not like he has totally imploded or self-immolated when he has been inside the ropes on Sunday. He's still 56 on the PGA Tour in final round scoring average. Yes, that's worse than his round one, round two, round three scoring average. But I think that's also pretty natural that when you get into the pressure and the cauldron of a Sunday, yeah, you probably play a little bit tense and a little bit tight. I think when you look at that jam-packed leaderboard with, again, six players separated by just two shots, knowing that he's going to have to play fearlessly, knowing that he's going to have to play aggressively, knowing, as he said, that there's blood in the water and that if multiple players have shot 62 this week, he fully expects someone's going to throw down a number and he's going to have to potentially go out and chase it throughout the rest of the day. I think that can only help him keep his mind flipped to that. In the way that he's hitting it, the length that he's hitting it, the quality of iron shots that he is hitting at the 15th hole, notwithstanding, I do think I have the most confidence, Rex, in Xander Schauffele on Sunday. How about Scottie Scheffler? We talked about him on the Friday podcast, a Friday podcast unlike any other in our podcast history. Most certainly, he dropped, Scottie Scheffler did, all the way down to a tie for 24th, five bogeys and a double bogey in what was a round of 73, snapped a streak of 42 consecutive rounds on the PGA Tour of par or better. Most critically, he was 70th out of 78 players around the green to have six scrambling, made a mess of the second hole and followed it up with back-to-back bogeys to get off track. How surprised were you by what Scotty put up on Saturday?
Not very. And here's why. Todd Lewis talked to Scotty after his round, and Scotty spoke with the CBS after his round, but he didn't go into the normal scrum area for a lot of reasons. I don't think anybody was overly surprised given what happened yesterday, but Todd talked to him, and I guess he had like a 30-minute conversation with his lawyer this morning, and I think things finally did sort of, I don't want to say crash down, but things probably did crystallize a little bit where the lawyer sort of walked him through, okay, going forward, this is what the process is going to be. His arraignment's going to be Tuesday here in Louisville at 9 a.m. He doesn't have to be there for that. I would imagine he's not going to be there for that, but his lawyer probably painted a picture that Scotty probably hadn't taken the time or the effort or the energy to understand. He was a little shell-shocked, to be honest with you. And if he talks tomorrow, my guess is he's going to cop to that. It was always going to be difficult to follow up what he did yesterday after such an emotional day where you start the day getting arrested, getting stuffed in the back of a patrol car, stretching on the floor of a cell, and then going out and shooting around and keeping yourself into contention. We talk about following up good rounds. It's one thing to follow up a good round. That's following up an unprecedented day. And I think it was going to be difficult, and it proved that.
Once the adrenaline wears off, you never quite know exactly what you're going to do, how you're going to play in this instance. I'd be very curious to know why they felt that was the time to have that conversation. Scottie Scheffler was three shots off the lead heading into the third round. That is exactly what you have an agent for. That's exactly what you have a manager for, to be the in-between, to be the liaison. If you're the lawyer and Scottie Scheffler's not getting arraigned until Tuesday, why are you planting this in his head at the halfway point of a major championship when the single season slam is still at this point very much alive?
Well, first and foremost, we don't know exactly what that conversation was. I think Todd reported it was about 30 minutes. My guess is the lawyer probably felt like these were things his client needed to know. And look, these are
then tell his agent.
These are crazy circumstances. And the lawyer has, I'm sure, has never been in this situation. We had a client who was going into a Saturday of a major championship in contention, and he had to clear up some paperwork with him. So I'm not quite sure there was a blueprint for this one. So I'm going to let the lawyer off the hook. And given the seriousness of the charges, and we touched on this last night, there was four counts, but one of them is assault on a police officer. That's a felony. It's a very serious charge, and Scotty probably needed to hear this. And I know that's not what you want to hear right now, going into the third round of a major championship. And Scotty probably could have decided that, nope, let's just talk on Monday morning or Sunday evening when this is all over with. Even if he didn't have that conversation, I'm not quite sure it would play out any differently today, to be honest with you. There was going to be a letdown. You're right. Like, I can only imagine the adrenaline that was pumping through his body last night when his head hit his pillow still, because he was talking about trying to control his breathing and shaking and just not knowing what he went through. I guess the part that I have a harder time wrapping my mind around, and it's not impossible, but it kind of shows you his mindset, is that if indeed whatever was laid out to him this morning before he teed off is something that he didn't know, like at one point yesterday, you didn't turn on a TV. You didn't check the internet. Like, anyone who has either one of those things yesterday knew pretty much exactly what you'd been charged with and knew what you were facing. So that would be my only question.
I'm just flabbergasted that the lawyer would do that before the third round.
And maybe Scotty himself wanted to know. I mean, you're jumping to some assumptions there.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, but Scotty said after the round with CBS that he didn't feel like himself, that it was not a quote unquote normal routine this morning, to be sure, and he was not himself. It's just, I hope we can talk to Scotty Scheffler after his round on Sunday. I'll be very curious to know why he wanted to know that on the eve of the third round when he has a chance to win the championship. Still, sausage fingers up. Please continue.
Well, I wanted to turn this conversation into the sports radio thing. How far back is too far back? Because it's important to point out there's been not one but two 62s shot this week, Xander on Thursday, and then today, Shane Lowry. And that is the fifth. Well, it was the fourth and fifth in major championship history, just to give you some context on exactly how easy Valhalla is playing. So as I look at that board and I start doing the math, is 9 under too far back if a 62 is out there tomorrow?
Yes. 9 under is too far back. The magic number in these major championships, particularly the PGA Championship, is 2. 2 shots back is a magic number. That has been the case for, I believe it's somewhere in the 20s, something of like 23 of the past 24 winners at the PGA Championship have all been within 2 shots of the lead. The only example of that was not the case was Justin Thomas, who matched the major championship record. He was 7 shots back 2 years ago at Southern Hills. And as we've talked about on this podcast a couple times now, Valhalla is not Southern Hills. There's not a blow-up hole. There's not all that much trouble. Yes, you can make bogeys, but you can make them up quite easily because of the soft scoreable conditions with the birdies. The champion is going to come from Kyle Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Sahith Theegala, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland, or Bryson DeChambeau. All of those players are at or within 2 shots of a lead. One player, actually 2 players, Rex, who were not included in that group, who I do want to touch on in this mini podcast, was Rory McIlroy, who's now in a tie for 19th. At one point on Saturday, I think everyone was getting excited. Everyone was taking the bait. Everyone had seen this movie before. He got to within 3 shots of the lead, and then he played a 7-hole stretch on numbers 11 through 17 in 2 over par, where his putter went cold. The stretch that he said later he will rue. What do you think? What do you make of Rory's performance through 54 holes? Was this just yet another tease?
I don't agree with your 2-shot rule simply because how easy this golf course is playing. So I think I would open it up a little bit further. That said, I don't think Rory has no chance at this championship. And I guess I say that because the putter has seemed like it has been relatively cold all week long. I mean, he's had stretches where he's made some putts, but it doesn't look like he's entirely comfortable on the greens. And it doesn't also look like he's entirely comfortable on the tee, which is odd given how dominant he was last week at Quail Hollow, given how dominant he was on this very golf course back in 2014 when he won his last major championship. I think this one, this particular major, and like we can dissect these things all sort of in a silo, But when it comes to this one, I think Rory's probably going to look at a combination of factors because of what's transpired over the last 2 weeks. Winning last week at the Wells Fargo, not being voted onto the policy board, being appointed to something called the transaction subcommittee, filing for divorce on Monday. All of those things added up to where he is right now. And when we talk about Scotty's head spinning, and I'm sure it is for a lot of different reasons, I would imagine Rory's head is spinning as well.
In the interest of full disclosure, I absolutely butchered that stat. It wasn't 23 of the past 24, whatever I just said. It's 12 of the last 13 PGA championships won by a player.
Well done.
Out of leading, fourth and two shots of the lead heading into the final round. Just did want to button that up. Another player who will not be hoisting the Wanamaker Trophy on Sunday is Brooks Koepka, who is now tied for 47th, had a terrible day off the tee, continues to struggle. I think he's now missed 9 putts inside 10 feet. Rex, it now appears that more punishing workouts are in the future for Brooks Koepka after a third round 74, again, during what was the second lowest scoring third round in PGA Championship history. How surprised were you by Brooks's crash back to earth?
Very wildly. Absolutely. Like, I can come up with a bunch of different words to say it because you and I talked a lot about this earlier in the week. We felt like he had, quote unquote, flipped the switch. And I really thought that, like, oh, this is going to be the guy. He's embarrassed about what happened at the Masters. You're right. He put himself through these punishing workouts. I felt like the win in Singapore on the LIV Tour was sort of that turning point that we had last year when he won in Orlando at the LIV event there and then went on, contended at the Masters, and ended up winning the PGA Championship. It felt like this was the blueprint. I'm like, oh, I've seen this before. I know how Brooks can do this. He can turn it around really, really quickly. And he hasn't looked like the dude that walks with the swagger this week. He hasn't looked like the too cool for school kid this week. He looks like he's struggling. He looks like he's trying to find answers. Last night, he was going back and forth to the putting green with multiple putters. Like, clearly, he's got some stuff he needs to work on.
Yeah, not quite sharp enough this week, just as he was not quite sharp enough at Augusta National for the Masters as well. I guess in a larger sample size, when you zoom out, LIV Singapore may have actually been the anomaly or the aberration to how Brooks Koepka is playing in 2024 rather than the norm. One thing I did want to button up, which has been a topic of conversation on this podcast, Rex, all week long. You and I, yes, are in the same location. We are both in the media center here at Valhalla Golf Club. In fact, we're probably separated by 10 feet. What you and I cannot or do not know how to do is record together. Don't get too close because then our mics will pick it up and then we'll have issues. We are not pod experts. This is a very bare bones operation that we are trying to bring you folks here on YouTube or wherever you're getting your podcasts on an audio platform. If anyone knows how we can use StreamYard and also record together at the same time without having to pass back microphones back and forth like idiots, please let us know in the comments section. We're dying to know. With that said, Rex, who is your winner of this 106th PGA Championship and at what number?
I'm not entirely comfortable with this, and you're right. This is probably one of those things, as I mentioned earlier in the week, we should have hashed through before we actually started the podcast. I'm going to go with Xander as well after I just got through sitting here chewing him up a little bit and talking about how I don't like his chances. I feel like I'm not quite as on board as you are. I haven't picked him to win every major for the last decade, but I do feel like his time has come. His work with Chris Como has created a more consistent swing, a more powerful swing, and you combine that with his short game. You combine that with a mind that is clearly just better than other minds or a lot of other minds on the PGA Tour. He never gets too high. He never gets too low. All of those things are a combination of a guy that not only should win majors, but should win multiple major championships. And if you look at that board, as I just said, you can pick apart pretty much every player on that board and say, well, this is the problem I have with this guy, and this is the problem I have with that guy. With Xander, that list is much smaller. So I like Xander. You pick 20 under at the beginning of the week. I don't think they get there. I think something around 18.
Oh, I'm not so sure that 18 is going to be enough to win this championship. I think it's supposed to be 86 degrees and light winds. Obviously, the golf course will continue to be soft on Sunday. I think he's going to have to go out and get it. I think that was well put, your description, your rationale for why you'd pick Xander Schauffele. I feel the best about him. Yes, I think they all have nits that you can pick. But I think Xander Schauffele is the most complete player on that leaderboard. He is most certainly due. And it just feels it just feels proper, Rex, that a player of Xander Schauffele's caliber, who has been a now excellent player, a complete and talented player on the PGA Tour for the past 6 or 7 years, gets crowned as a major champion. I do think that comes on Sunday, and I do think it's going to take him getting to probably 19, if not 20 under par to do it. I think all of the years of heartache and close calls end on Sunday. Then again, you and I have also been wrong before and most certainly will be wrong again. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. In the meantime, you guys know the drill, nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates from the PGA Championship. On Sunday night, we will return to a regularly scheduled program that is not limiting ourselves to 25 minutes. We can go for 30. We can go for 45, depending on what actually transpires on Sunday at Valhalla. Hell, we may even go an hour long. As always, we appreciate you listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in 24 hours after the conclusion of this PGA Championship.
Do you know the definition of a mini podcast?